All right, so today we're going over Matthew chapter 8. Again, thank you guys for allowing me to do this again. I guess last time I did not like freak you guys out enough for you guys to kick me out. So thank you for at least putting up with me for another of Ashley's little, sermons. But we have a lot to unpack today, and so I hope that you guys can stick with me. And maybe at the end we can tie it together and it can mean something for us. So first I want to go over verses 1 through 4 and go through it piece by piece. Starting in verse 1, it says, Jesus came down from the mountain and great crowds followed him. So as we look at this verse and what it's trying to tell us is Jesus just did the Sermon on the Mount. He was preaching and he was teaching, but he doesn't end it there. What Jesus does is come down and meets with people. So I want us to keep that in mind throughout everything that we do. Jesus doesn't just teach. He doesn't just make a podcast or make a YouTube video, but Jesus goes and does everything that he just preached earlier. And then in verse 2 it says, and there was a leper who came to him and knelt before him, saying, Lord, if you choose, you can make me clean. So, something that we need to look at as far as lepers go is, I'm sure everybody here has heard about leprosy, and what it does, and how it's a nerve disorder that causes nerve disorder that causes your ability to feel pain and all that deteriorates, and eventually you'll die. And what would happen with a lot of lepers, and it was according to custom that they would be stationed outside a camp, and everybody was ordered to stay 6 feet from a leper unless you were downwind from them. In that case, you would have to stay about 150 feet away from them. So imagine you were told that you had leprosy. And everybody, you had to go outside of the city. You had to be away from everybody else. And nobody can touch you. And nobody can get in 6 feet from you. And imagine how lonely that would be. And how awful that would be. And but he goes to Jesus and he trusts Jesus and says, Lord, if you can make me clean, if you choose, you can make me clean. So Jesus stretches out his hands and touches him. Again, this man with leprosy has been alone, on his own, outside of the city, outside of camp. No one can get in 6 feet from him. And Jesus breaks custom and touches him. And Jesus says, I do choose, be made clean. And then immediately, this man's leprosy was cleansed. And then Jesus says to him, see that you say nothing to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priests, and offer the gift that Moses commanded as a testimony to them. So, Jesus says, don't say this to anybody. Jesus doesn't want this being spread around, news to follow, and for his fame to grow. He does this healing for the purpose of this man. And then he says, go and offer the gift to Moses that Moses commanded. So the first thing that Jesus is worried about was that this man go to the priest. And in Leviticus, it talks about what would happen if a skin disease is healed. And this is in Leviticus 14:20. And the priest shall offer the burnt offering and the grain offering on the altar. Thus the priest shall make atonement on his behalf, and he shall be made clean. So this man is lonely. He is left outside the city, and nobody can get near him. Jesus touches him and says, go straight to the priest. And the reason why Jesus said this was so that this man, had to first go to the priest before he can join everybody else, before he can come back into community with everybody else. And so Jesus is worried that this man is back in the community, that he's loved again, that he can be touched again, that he can be cared for again. And then, next, verse 5, when he entered Capernaum, the centurion came to him, appealing to him, and saying, "Lord, my servant is lying at home, paralyzed in terrible distress." In the New Testament, 7 times a centurion is mentioned in the New Testament. And each time, they are presented as a good man. And a centurion under Roman law had a right to kill a slave, but in this case, chooses not to. So I want us to think about this verse, these 2 verses, and see what it means. That the worst of the worst, in this case, a centurion, is shown as good. So who are some of the worst people that we can think of today? Maybe those people on Facebook or on YouTube message boards, or on people protesting at maybe this church or Pride next week. Nazis. Imagine if those people were presented as good. So in this case, he is. He cares about his servant. He cares about his slave. And instead of killing him, this centurion goes to Jesus. And then Jesus says, and then this man says to him, "I will come and cure him." And then the centurion answered, "Lord, I am not worthy to come under to have you come under my roof, but only speak the word and my servant will be healed." So again, this has some Jewish customs mixed into it. And this centurion is aware that it was not recommended for a Jew to enter a Gentile's home. And then he goes on. "For I am also a man under authority with soldiers under me, and I will say to one, 'Go,' and he goes, and to another, 'Come,' and he comes, and to my slave, 'Do this,' and the slave does that." When Jesus heard him, he was amazed and said to those who followed him, "Truly I tell you, no one in Israel have I found such faith." So, in this verse, I want to point out one thing. Truly I tell you, and no one in Israel have I found such faith. Jesus is amazed at the faith of a man who was a living representation of oppression to these people. And he says, this man who represents authority of oppression, of slavery, of being ruled under another nation, this man has more faith than the rest of you who say you have faith. When Jesus is talking about Israel here, he isn't talking about the nation. He's talking about the faith community. So imagine if somebody says an atheist has more faith than us here in this church, and how crazy that would be to us. Then he goes on. "I tell you, many will come from the east and west and will eat with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven." So he's saying this man, this centurion, this living representation of slavery and oppression, they will eat with Abraham and Isaac. They will go into the kingdom of heaven before you, the faith community, enters into the kingdom of heaven. And while the heirs of the kingdom will be thrown into outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And to the centurion Jesus said, go, let it be done according to your faith. And the servant was healed in that hour. How many times have we failed to represent or failed to see the power of Christ in our lives? And what Jesus can do, the amazing miracles that Jesus does for us. And we think that, well, just because we go to church every day or every Sunday, and just because we pray every day, that Jesus will heal us or Jesus will take care of us in the worst of our times. But it's not those actions. It's not just going to church or praying. It's actually having faith. It is trusting and knowing that God will work miracles in our lives. And that Jesus is with us and cares for us, even in the worst of our times. And then it goes on. Jesus enters Peter's house. Again, there's a lot to unpack, and I apologize. Peter's house, and he saw his mother-in-law. And I just want to point out something here with the mother-in-law. We all know that Peter's the rock that the church was built. This mother-in-law thing totally disproves that a priest in a Catholic church cannot be married. Okay, Peter was married. But anyways. Jesus touches Peter's mother-in-law's hand, and the fever has left her, and she got up and began to serve him. That evening they brought to him many who were possessed with demons, and he cast out the spirits with the word and cured all those who were sick. Now the sickness that we see was not as bad as leprosy, but still significant because it shows that Jesus does not just care for the worst of our sickness and worst of our times, but also Jesus cares for the lesser problems. Jesus isn't just looking out for those who have the worst diseases, but looks out for those who have a common cold or who are going through the worst of times, but also those who are having trouble with their car that morning, or a flat tire. And then it continues. That evening they brought to him many who were possessed with demons, and he cast out spirits with the word and cured all those who were sick. This was to fulfill what had been spoken through the prophet Isaiah. He took our infirmities and bore our diseases. Now what this section right here, a little separate from before, is pointing out is that Jesus continues and he goes and sees more sick people. And he doesn't just see them like an assembly line. He doesn't heal them like 1, 2, 3, 4. They line up and he just heals them. Oh, okay, you're good, go. You're good, go. And it's implying that Jesus is dealing with each person individually. And so that Jesus cares for each and every single person on a personal level. And then later, he took our infirmities and bore diseases. Jesus doesn't just heal, but he takes the sickness upon himself. Almost like secondary PTSD. And this shows us that sometimes in order to care for people, that it's not so much just to give somebody something, throw money into a basket, or send money through PayPal to somebody, but that true healing takes part on the front lines. That in order to truly be Christ in this world, for us to truly care for others, we need to be on the front line caring for people. That we need to take their pains upon ourselves. When you talk to somebody, that you feel their same pain, that you have empathy with them. And then later. Now, when Jesus saw great crowds around him, he gave orders to go over to the other side. A scribe then approached and said, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." So, in 18, when Jesus saw great crowds, Jesus has a tendency in the scriptures to, anytime he starts to get a large following, he goes somewhere else. It shows that Jesus is in this for his own glory, but Jesus is working for the good of humanity, for the good of the world. So he starts to get a following, he goes somewhere else. And then naturally, because he's going to a following, a scribe approaches him and says, "Teacher, I'll follow you wherever you go." Jesus often got requests like this, and so people want to join him. There seems to be glory associated with following Jesus. And usually when somebody approaches them like this, Jesus offers something difficult in return, a difficult task, in order to weed out those who aren't willing to follow him. So it says in 20, "Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." So this is saying that, hey, this isn't going to be easy. If you're going to truly follow me, if you're going to stop what you're doing and be one of my disciples, that everything that, there isn't glory, there isn't nice 5-star hotels involved with following me and being one of my disciples. You're going to be sleeping in a dirty tent like they did this week, right? Oh, and you're going to get dirty. Because kingdom work isn't about the glory. It's about the other people. It's about caring for others. He then goes on to say, another one of his disciples said to him, "Lord, first let me go and bury my father." But Jesus said to him, "Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead." Ministry isn't glamorous, and helping other people should only, most likely only attract the most spiritual among us. Jesus is weeding out those who only want to follow him because it's a cool thing to do. But in reality, in order for us to be true disciples, for us to really follow Jesus, we need to recognize and witness that it's not always going to be easy. And then it goes on. And when he got into the boat, his disciples followed him. A windstorm arose on the sea so great that the boat was being swamped by the waves, but he was asleep. And they went and woke him up, saying, "Lord, save us, we are perishing." And he said to them, "Why are you afraid, you of little faith?" Then he got up, rebuked the winds. And then they say, "What sort of man is this that even the winds and the sea obey him?" So again, Jesus is in a human body. And then I think what's amazing about this section of passage, this next miracle, is that we like to think of Jesus and just Jesus' divinity, but that dude needed to get some sleep, right? And he's passed out, and there's storms, and there's waves coming, And Jesus is just laying down on the bottom of the boat, passed out, snoring as loud as he can. And the disciples start to freak out. And so when I look at this passage, Jesus says to them, "Why are you afraid?" It's almost like he's angry at them, right? Jesus, I don't know if you, can you imagine being woke up from the deep sleep? I know you can always call me at 3 a.m. in the morning, but you're not going to get happy, lovely Ashley. You're probably going to get what? But I will still answer the phone. Jesus still answers the call because they're freaking out. They're saying, "We're going to perish." And he still answers the phone and says, rebukes the winds and the sea, takes care of everything. And everybody is amazed and says, "Why are the winds and the sea? Why do they obey him?" Okay. So why is all this significant? And what are the things that tie every single one of these passages together? There are so much political and social aspects to each one of these little miracles. And we can go all day on each and every single one of them. But I think there's a couple things that tie these things together. And first of these is that are the miracles themselves. The miracle of these miracles is that God doesn't allow us to continue to suffer, but God takes care of us in our needs. I don't know where you're at or what kind of pain you're going through, what kind of suffering you're going through today, but the answer to your suffering and your pain is that Jesus hears it and Jesus cares for it. That there is an answer and that God is actively working in our lives in order to help us and to take care of us. Does that mean that every single time we're going to get healed from leprosy? If I know that's not real today, or it is real, but I know we don't recognize it. We don't see it a lot here in Texas, but no, God cares for us, and he's taking care of us. And he wants to heal us right where we're at. So when you're out on the waves and the boat's hitting you, or you have a sick person in your life, paralyzed and in distress, Jesus cares for you. God cares for you. And then the next thing, and probably the most crazy part of this entire passage of scripture, and probably the entire Gospels, is that Jesus is there. God made real. Because before the New Testament, before Jesus was born in that manger, people saw God as this outside being, yeah, up in heaven, separate and away from us. But in reality, what Jesus showed us is that God is there with us today. And today, the Holy Spirit continues to be with us in this room, in our lives, in the car as we go to work, in the back room while we're crying and asking God, "What's going on? Please help me. Please take care of me." God is with us when we are with at school and with our loved ones and with my friends and family up in El Reno. And God is continuing to be with us today. God is not some outside force. God is not somewhere else. God is here and taking care of us right now. And what I want us to take away from this passage is that God is with us and God is taking care of us. But also, too, that we are disciples. We are supposed to carry God with us wherever we go. We are supposed to be the living representation, the holy people of God. And so that means we need to be present in other people's lives as well. Don't be like the God that the Israelites thought about before, a God of separate and away and over there. Be the person that decides to take God wherever you go. And what does that mean? That means being out there and helping those who may be suffering right now. Maybe sending a text to somebody who is in pain right now and saying, I love you. I care for you. Maybe that means that instead of waiting for the homeless to come to us, maybe find a way that we can go and serve the homeless. Or instead of waiting for people to walk through that door and join us here at this church, that we go and invite others to come and be a part of what we're doing. That we go, that we do, and that we be present in everybody else's lives. Because we can't work miracles waiting for the sick and the lonely and the helpless to come to us. For us to work miracles and be the holy people of God, we have to go to them. So let's take a moment of silence, and I want us to think about a couple of ways in which we can do that, that we can work miracles in other people's lives. I want you first to think about how you as an individual can be the holy representation of God in somebody's lives. And then I want you to dream up how we as a church can be the holy church here in Sherman, and how we can go and work miracles in within this community.